coming to you from Orange County, California. This is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Welcome to another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I am joined, as always, by magnanimous Max Montana.
Hey, everybody. How you doing?
And today we are going to be talking to you about some youth training considerations. Pretty big topic, probably some things are going to go beyond the scope of our discussion today, but the more you follow along with, our Instagram and social media and our athletes and just the current state of events in U.S. weightlifting and everything, you're seeing more and more young athletes be highly visible and highly successful, all the way down from Princess P, the amazing daughter, Perseus Townsend of our weightlifter James Townsend, who just at 4 years old is posting videos doing, 10 pull-ups. She just posted a video doing 50 push-ups the other day. As well as if you follow Marissa, you may see her 13-year-old daughter coming to the gym with her more and more frequently. And then, of course, at the recent World Championships for weightlifting, incredible performances as a new senior American record in the snatch for CJ Cummings and all the other incredible lifting he's done in the past few years. And Harrison Morris at just 17 years old, winning a senior world medals in all three of those, right? Bronze across the board. An incredible time. And then, conversely to that, there's so much of sort of the bad of youth training going on as well, with more and more prevalence of early specialization in youth athletics. So we want to talk about some misconceptions, bust some, for the listeners of this, probably, very old-seeming myths, and talk about some of our ideas for developing youth athletes with the idea of weightlifting in mind a bit more, but really general development for youth athletes to set them up for long-term success, sort of regardless of their sport of choice.
Where do you think that kid Richard Sandrack fits in on the good, the bad? I mean, he was the child Hercules.
Yes. I'd have to Google. I could Google him.
For those of you watching, just Google Richard Sandrack, and you'll be pleasantly surprised. I believe he was I think his father may have been giving him some kind of anabolic steroids in his cereal. Chad's now being wowed. He actually is an Oklahoma guy now.
I'm familiar with him, yes.
Yeah. And he may have gotten into some movies and played in some films, but he was shredded and jacked at 4, 5, 6 years old.
Yeah.
But in a very weird way where only, I think everyone watched it and saw him and was like, oh, that's not good. That's not right. Yeah. But the dad must have been no, he's fine. He's normal. And I think the whole thing, totally melted down. But a good example.
I'd imagine he has quite a bit of psychological issues to deal with at this point.
What does his Wikipedia page say?
Quit bodybuilding because he became bored. And his father was arrested and went to prison.
Yeah, so those two reasons.
He does some chin-ups, runs some stairs, and rides a skateboard these days.
A happy ending to that story.
And he works as a stuntman at the Waterworld attraction at Universal Studios Hollywood.
That's pretty good.
He's local. We can get him on. Joanne, get Sandrack on the phone.
Get him on.
Yeah. Child Hercules,
you'll know when you see it.
It'll be in the white pages under Child Hercules.
Right. Mr. Child Hercules to you.
Sir Hercules. All right, so the first thing we need to talk about are, of course, dispelling some of these myths, and the biggest ones that are going to come along with youth training is the idea of disrupting the athlete's growth and negatively affecting their growth plates. And as a smart, savvy, almost definitely good looking listener of the Jug Life Podcast, you know that idea is really flawed. Running and jumping impose much, much higher levels of relative force on the body than lifting weights do. And really no one's worried about their child running or jumping, let alone the considerations of things like youth football or the contact sport elements. So, you know, if you do shitty lifting for a 6-year-old, and they get hurt doing that, you know, that's shitty lifting's fault, not lifting's fault.
Yeah. I think most of those, I actually don't even know if there is, if there are cases or research or actual situations where kids have done lifting and damaged growth plates or something, assuming it was within the spectrum of lifting, you know, doing anything reasonably, right? Not someone that was, you know, getting the Richard Sandrack treatment and maybe overdoing it or getting injured from lifting. I remember a few years ago, there was even somebody that was kind of spreading this rumor, that this idea that, like, don't swing your kids around, don't hold them by the arms and swing them around. You remember that? Which is, again, like, I mean, how many kids are doing these things? Whereas you have kids running around the playground on monkey bars, you know,
yeah.
How many of those, all that stuff is within the spectrum of totally healthy. The kids lifting, stunting the growth is definitely, we know that's a myth.
And I think so much of that would come from the fallacious thinking of, they see successful weightlifters, the recently deceased Naeem Soleimanoglu.
Yeah, that was good.
That was good?
Yeah.
Unrelated, the job of announcer at World Weightlifting Championships, where we've been watching all week, that is an incredibly difficult job because there's some very hard to pronounce names in that.
Nailing every one of them.
Yeah. That one, the Mongolian girl last night in the 75s.
He crushed that name.
Did he?
I think so, because, well, the name had a lot of D's and J's and O's and M's, and he said something that didn't sound like it would have come out of that combination of letters.
Yeah.
And it rolled off his tongue. So
as much as it could have.
Yeah. Maybe he butchered it. Maybe.
As much as a 9-syllable word.
She actually wasn't even sure if it was her. It was so bad.
Timed out. He was calling me. But yeah, I think a lot of that is going to come from the idea of looking at these very, very successful lifters and thinking, well, they're short, so lifting must make you short. But that would be akin to the idea that looking at basketball players and being like, well, they're tall, so if I play basketball, I must become tall. it's rather the sport just selects for that. And even the same idea with gymnastics, which, again, gymnastics would have much, much higher impact forces on the joints and bones than weightlifting would, but there's still not a risk of stunting a child's growth because of gymnastics. You just don't see, you know, 6'2" guys doing gymnastics because they're not as well suited to do it. So it sort of is a self-fulfilling prophecy there. But it's not the sport or the training that makes them short or tall. It rather, the people you know for being successful in that sport are built that way because it's better for the sport. So now that we've got that out of the way, that good training for youth is totally, you know, perfectly safe and healthy. We now need to look at some goals for youth training. And the term youth training is going to encompass a wide range. And for the purpose of this discussion, we're going to be talking about everything from, you know, down 5 years old, maybe even younger than that in a couple instances, through high school age, so about through age 18. But the goals for the earlier stages of those development. As a parent or a potential future parent listening to this, or a youth coach, you know, probably the real goals of maybe pre-pubescent training for athletes would be, number one, to develop coordination. Coordination, and along with that, rhythm. Because it is that rhythm, the combination of rhythm and coordination, that is really the quality of quote-unquote athleticism, where, you know, there are great athletes in football, basketball, so on and so forth, that can run very fast or jump very high or very strong, but the lack of coordination and rhythm is going to be what differentiates between the people who are extremely successful in sport and less successful. And a lot of the reason why, along with technical tactical skills, someone like, you know, Michael Jordan or Jerry Rice, who might not have been the biggest, the strongest, the fastest, but were so exceptionally successful in their sport because that athleticism, the combination of coordination and rhythm and the fluid movement that creates is such an important skill and so key to develop at a young age. So that coordination and rhythm is our first goal. Then general movement patterns, being able to move effectively through them. And that's running, so sprinting, jumping, throwing. And throwing has a lot of different incarnations, you know, whether that's a one-arm throw like a baseball or a football. But the ability to generate force into an implement and accelerate it out of the athlete's hands. So that can be, you know, shot put, all the different track and field-based throwing events. So more so the concept of accelerating an implement out of the athlete's hands is throwing, squatting, hip hinge, hip extension, pressing, and pulling. All going to be very important to understand the movement patterns of those. Again, those are movement categories. So when we say squat, we're not talking about high bar back squat. We're not talking about low bar squat. We're not talking about front squat or any other specific squat variation. It's the ability to bend one's knees and stand up. And then developing relative strength, which is, of course, going to enhance those previous goals. And reactive elastic qualities. So jumping, bounding, sprinting, developing a very fast twitch wired athlete, or maximizing the fast twitch fiber that the athlete is born with. And last but definitely not least, a love of sport and love of training, because there's too many cautionary tales, whether it's the Todd Marinoviches of the world or the Richard Sandraks. Maybe there'll be a 30 for 30 on Sandrak soon.
Possibly. Very unlikely. Yeah. Extremely unlikely. But
they do 30 for 30 shorts.
He got a 3-minute bit on NBC, and that was it.
But yeah, the love of sport and love of training, because if a child doesn't have that, it's very unlikely that they would go on to have a successful career and a healthy and happy life, for that matter. They may have a successful athletic career, but
that's true.
They'll spend all the money that they made, you know, as a young Hercules on therapy
later. Dad problems.
Do you think so?
It all started at 4 years old when my father handed me a bowl of Fruit Loops, and I noticed there was some little pink pills floating in it. That was an excerpt from the Richard Sandrak biography.
Yeah. Lucky Charms seemed like the prime way to really, sneak some deep old tabs in there.
That's so terrible.
So before we get into a bit more discussion of this, we're going to take a quick break for a strength history minute, and then we'll be back with more ideas on youth training.
How awesome would it be if a strength history minute was Richard Sandrak?
Andrei Chumerkin was a fantastic super heavyweight lifter representing Russia. He took gold in the 96 games in Atlanta and bronze in Sydney. He was also a 4-time world champion and a world medalist on 3 other occasions, with PRs of 202.5 kilos in the snatch, 262.5 kilos in the clean and jerk. Chumerkin was truly a remarkable lifter, but it was his sheer power that is what people will remember most. Standing about 6 feet tall and weighing in about 170 to 175 kilos, which was really no surprise as he was allegedly 12.5 pounds, about almost 6 kilos at birth, it would take 250 plus kilos to touch his shoulders in the front rack position, and he has one of the most famous weightlifting attempts of all time when he missed a 272.5 kilo, 601 pound clean at the 2000 Olympics trying to win the gold. All right, we are back from the Strength History Minute. Today we are talking about our youth athletic training and considerations to help set youth athletes up for long-term success. And one of the most prevalent problems in American sport culture, and I can't speak to the other countries as much, but I don't believe it's as prevalent in other places, is this idea of early specialization in youth athletics. So whether this is, you know, a six-year-old starting to play club soccer on various teams throughout the year, travel baseball, you know, winter ball into their, you know, little league, into summer league, into so on and so forth, and is doing the same sport or having specialized training for a specific sport year round, it's becoming more and more common, and it's happening at the detriment of more and more athletes. And I think as weightlifting continues in popularity, and particularly as people see the success of people like CJ Cummings and Harrison Morris, and international, you know, youth and junior lifters, for every time there's a clip of a, you know, 8-year-old Chinese kid performing with this very crisp technique, I think it can give a incomplete picture of the whole training situation that's going on. So some of the downfalls of early specialization, certainly overuse injuries. Yeah, that's why you see baseball players getting Tommy John when they're 12 years old. The higher prevalence of like knee injuries for female athletes in volleyball, soccer, basketball, all that stuff, higher than the female knee injuries already are occurring. And then a lack of well-rounded development, which is going to be the idea that we address the most in what we talk about here, is, are you trying to be the best athlete, or are you trying to be the best, you know, just the best soccer player or best basketball player, best baseball player, whatever it is, best weightlifter? Because in the long run, it's probably more likely that the best athlete is going to become the best in whatever their chosen endeavor is. And of course, with the idea of the love of sport and love of training in mind, burnout is very common. The kid just gets pushed too hard or driven by the parents and not their own intrinsic motivation for things. They're in too much too soon. And, while they may be the best 11, 12, 13-year-old athlete, by the time they're 16 or 17, they're really sick of what they're doing.
The entire concept of the whole model of early specialization also falls on its face in a lot of places, because you end up in situations for like weightlifting, as an example, in taking kids through, like, your early specialization is going to be focused entirely on acquisition of results, basically. There's no focus on the general qualities development of the athlete in a complete sense, this long-term approach. So you have people achieving results very quickly to a high level, and then when stagnation occurs, you end up with lots of problems. You have either injuries, overuse injuries. There's an oversight on a lot of things in that process by specializing early, like a lack of development of technique, a lack of addressing general qualities, a lack of developing preventing injuries or addressing weaknesses. So you end up with kind of this one-dimensional athlete in the end, especially in weightlifting, where, you know, I think we kind of saw, you might see some guys like at Worlds and stuff, or some athletes where they're just very, there's a tremendous amount of physical issues with the person. Crookedness, you know, injuries, single, you know, like we saw the guy the other night who's like, part of his body was lifting a different plane.
Yeah, if you watch the kind of number two guy for Iran in the 85-kilo class, he was twisted in every direction, particularly evident in the snatch as he set up.
Yes.
He was going 9 different directions.
His knees were pointing to the left, his shoulders to the right, and one shoulder above the other, one hip below the other. And he may not be a great example of early specialization. Most likely he is, because he comes from Iran.
Front, back, side to side, up and down. Yeah. He was going in the wrong directions.
You have a situation where when you choose early specialization, you choose a one-directional path. You have no options after you've executed all this training, everything has directed everything to one direction. So you have no chance to branch off of that and correct things or make adjustments because you've already established, look, they've learned the sport early on. Their technique is what it is. It's developed the way it has. And now it's just a matter of incrementally pushing the loading and the training further and further. And the further you go down that road, the harder it is to change things. You can't grow the base bigger once you've, you know, moved beyond that point of like, well, we've already gotten what we've got at 16. So now it's just a matter of augmenting this with, you know, by loading more and more and more and pushing more and more training. And then even to the degree of obviously like, you know, performance enhancing drugs to further increase the results in the sport. And so it's just very flawed thinking in that you've basically said, hey, right from the get-go, we're going to try and do this. And almost all the time, it ends in very bad outcomes for the athlete, right?
Yeah. So a lot of the concepts about youth training come down to the question of when do you want to be the best?
Right.
Do you want to be the best 11-year-old in the world or in your city or county or state or whatever? Or do you want to be the best 18, 22-year-old, 26-year-old? And all, you know, a lot of these different sports are going to have sort of biological age differences of when people normally reach their peak. So that kind of thing may need to be considered. If you have someone who's an exceptionally talented female gymnast,
right,
and you look at that sport and see, all right, it's about 15 to 18, you know, that's when we got to be great. Then a lot of these numbers that we're going to talk about may get moved up. But assuming you don't have the next, you know, Simone Biles as your kid, and there's only one person that I can think of who may, if James is watching or listening to this, he's really the only person who may be in that situation. Yeah. But for everybody else, you know, you want your kid to go and have a fun, successful high school athletic career, and maybe they get to go play college. But to make that happen the best, there's a few things to understand in that. You know, first, you need to understand the difference between someone's biological age and their developmental age. We're going to talk about biological ages a lot in this, but you know, there's 5 years old is not 5 years old it doesn't look the same for everyone,
yeah.
And neither does 10 and 15 and so on and so forth. So keep that in mind when taking these considerations, you know, into account with your kids or kids that you're fortunate enough to work with. Like in the example of James's daughter, I believe he said that she crawled at 3 months old.
Yeah, she's and, walking at 7 months old.
Yeah, walked at seven months old. But even in the case of his two daughters, he was a bit concerned that his younger daughter was 8 months old and was not walking yet. Like, oh my God, she's so far behind. Everything was perfectly normal. So understand the difference between biological age and developmental age, and you can't rush the developmental age. It's going to happen when it happens. And then as we look at the means of training and kind of along still the goals of the training, when dealing with team sports, and you know, I see this, I have three young nieces, and I would go to watch their soccer games, and it was an internal struggle for me just to see what was happening and be like, oh my God, everything is wrong. But
is that the guy was trying to run really complicated plays?
Yeah, my brother is the coach, but so I scolded him, but not really complicated plays, but I do give him a hard time about this stuff is striking this balance between technical learning and tactical learning, because 6 year old soccer players, you know, when the ladybugs play the dragonflies, no 6 year old on the field can run a soccer play. One, because they just don't understand it. And two, even if they did understand it, it doesn't matter for shit because they can't run, pass, or receive a pass or run with the ball.
Shoot the ball.
Yeah. And it's very tough as a parent, I'm sure. And you know, I don't have kids, but seeing the interaction of the parents on the sidelines of those games and stuff to not want to win the game. And even they're not keeping score or whatever, but that's I started playing soccer when I was 5 years old and kind of grew up in a bit of a soccer family to a degree because my older brother played club and my dad coached club soccer in Orange County, California, where club sports are very prevalent and very serious. So when I was 5 years old, I was keeping score. You know, I knew the score of the games that we were playing in. The Strikers was our team, and we had these kind of like purplish uniforms, and pumped on that. But the best team I was on, ASO, when I was little, we had pink and blue uniforms. I don't know how we got stuck with those, but we used it as our motivator.
Oh, like, nice.
Yeah. This is bullshit that we had pink uniforms. I don't think I said bullshit because I was 8. I would have gotten in a lot of trouble for that. But we were fueled by the hate of our pink uniforms to destroy the other team. But the kids can't do the tactical parts of the game because they can't first do the technical parts of the game. So it's important to understand that process, that sequence of learning is they have to be able to run. They have to be able to stop and change direction, control the ball, pass the ball, receive the ball in the example of soccer before we need to be concerned with really where they're going on the field because no one cares who wins the most soccer games for 6 years old and 7 years old, but that athlete who learns all the parts very well when they're mentally mature enough to understand the tactical parts of the game, and they'll be much more successful down the road, 15, 16, 17, aka the time where you earn college scholarships and the time beyond that. When looking at sort of the bigger picture of youth training and maybe some with the specific context of weightlifting in mind. And the reason we're going to talk about weightlifting training for youth athletes and not powerlifting training for youth athletes is that powerlifting training for youth athletes is completely pointless.
There's a lot of bashing powerlifting, considering both of us have done quite a bit of powerlifting.
But I say this even for my own athletic career. I came from track and field and transitioned to powerlifting. I wish I would have transitioned to weightlifting. Not that I love weightlifting and hate powerlifting, but because it's much more likely and possible for if I would have tried weightlifting for a year, 2, 3 years and seen what success I could have had in that and been like, hey, you know, I'm not going to have success at the level that I'm interested in for this to smoothly transition to powerlifting from there. The other direction is harder. And the same thing will be true for youth development is the skills that they're going to develop in weightlifting are going to have a higher transfer to more possibilities. And if one of those possibilities and options ends up being powerlifting down the road, so be it. I can't say this for a fact, but I would be very, very surprised if the Andrei Milanichevs of the world, the Yuri Belkins of the world, first started out as powerlifting in one of the 12,000 sports schools of I'd be surprised if they started in powerlifting.
Oh, surprised!
I'm sure that they started as weightlifters.
Yeah,
as learning and training weightlifting, and at some point transitioned to powerlifting, and whether that's showing more proclivity for powerlifting because of or lack of proclivity for weightlifting, maybe in a lack of upper body mobility or whatever it may be, or just bad body proportions for weightlifting. But hey, those really long arms you have means that you get to pull a huge deadlift. So that's why we're going to talk about weightlifting for youth athletes and not powerlifting for youth athletes, just further endearing myself to the leadership of the USAPL as they promote the youth nationals and whatnot. we want to look at movement quality. Is their technique good? Is their technique of running good? Is their technique of jumping good? Is their technique of snatch and clean and jerk good? The speed of those movements. And then finally, the loading of those movements. It needs to be prioritized in that way. Can they do it right? Can they do it fast? And if those two things are going well, there'll be plenty of time in their life to do it heavy as well. So before Max talks a bit more about how to integrate those concepts into it, let's just take a quick note about the ways to maybe set your, you know, the path that the child could be going down to set themselves up for the greatest long-term success in weightlifting or any other movement, and what they can do first, what they should do first. And the earliest training, and you probably don't want to be considering, you know, actually training your like 1-year-old or 2-year-old, but the best activities for the very young, the first thing they can do will be swimming.
Yeah.
Because of the buoyancy of swimming and the making the child lighter, they'll likely be able to swim before they can walk. And swimming and moving the body through the water is going to develop a certain kind of coordination and fluidity of movement that's very important to long-term success. Beyond that, beginning... And when I use these terms, particularly the next two, it's not the sport of it. It's sort of the activities involved around it. So we start out with swimming, and then they're going to move on to gymnastics, a big, broad umbrella of gymnastics-based activity. You know, maybe from a mommy and me gymnastics class when they're... I want to say that Maddie said she started doing gymnastics when she was 1 year old.
Yeah, I think that's yeah. actually kind of normal.
In those kind of like tumbling classes or whatever it is. But gymnastics-based activity. And then as the kid maybe gets into more, and again, developmental age versus biological age, but maybe 4 to 6 years old, then track and field-based activity could come about. And what is that but running, jumping, and throwing?
Yeah.
So that's sort of the consideration along the way.
Something to remember, too, is all of these, this is like a universal blueprint for essentially all athletes. You're going to, this would be ideal to start any youth if you're going to be, I mean, you know, you could even go further to say pretty much most kids should participate in this for a healthy lifestyle, but as a foundational element to becoming an athlete, it's universal across the board because these are all very general basic qualities. They're essentially the building blocks of what's to come later when they do start to develop, you know, technique and stuff for a particular sport.
Yeah. So looking at more specifically to some weightlifting considerations, and I'll let you start talking about that, but what is sort of the first thing, foundational thing that a young aspiring weightlifter may include in their training?
They need to learn how to use straps. That's the first most important. Really, with weightlifting, the sort of key elements, obviously outside of what we just talked about with the very general stuff, is the technique of the lifts. And the initial period of learning that has to be done very, very well, because the way you learn the lifts initially is going to have a big ramifications on how the lifts are executed later in life. And you know, like we talked about, the quality of movement, the movement itself, then the speed of movement, then the loading is the fundamental aspect there. How you teach the lift, teaching the proper aspects of the lifts, learning the lifts in the right segments, and then being able to execute them properly with the right speed and the right rhythm is the first and most fundamental aspect to starting any weightlifter. Above and beyond that, the general qualities, you know, running, jumping, throwing, and explosive movements are going to be the most, you know, the sort of underlying GPP or the underlying stuff there. But no real heavy loading is ever going to need to take place in that initial period. They don't need to learn how, you know, to snatch a maximum weight. They need to learn how to do snatches properly, right?
Yeah. And the I think the greatest example of really well done youth or long-term development I could think of is we were at the Ilya Klokov Polovnikov seminar, and I use this example all the time. And Ilya said through the translator, you know, people were asking about, well, when did you start weightlifting? When did you start training for weightlifting? And He said that at 6 years old, his mother sent him to the weightlifting club with his older brother. And this was essentially just to get him out of the house because he was very hyperactive and annoying to her. And that he would, quote, through the translator, run around the gym and do all the exercises. And probably unlikely that six-year-old Ilya inside the Kazakh weightlifting club just had free reign yeah. of playtime. But what that more likely means is that he did an incredibly general, widespread pool of activities like gymnastics-based stuff, running, jumping, throwing, calisthenics, body weight exercises, along with learning the technique of the snatch and clean and jerk, developing a great foundation for himself. Because if we were to go to a playground and choose, you know, who we wanted to develop for weightlifting, it's going to be the kids who run the fastest and jump the highest. Yeah. And it was little stubby bodies, their arms are too short to put into their own pockets.
What you're, what something to sort of understand there too is it's the difference between this is now the time period where you go from play as play or play as an activity to, like you could almost call it structured playing, right? Where there's a pre-planned regiment that's not. Aggressive, but the regiment is now planned to structure their playtime and the kind of activities they do that are going to guide them, you know, further into the sport itself, rather than just playing for the sake of playing, which is going to be much a little more early and still exists obviously within that spectrum because they're kids. But this is the transition to now play is an activity that is training. And learning that training is a fun thing and that there are, you know, structured activities they do.
Guided playing.
Guided playing, yeah.
Yes. You play at this thing on Monday, yeah. Wednesday, and Friday, and this thing on Tuesday and Thursday and Saturday.
And if you don't, your parents go to jail. it's really good, like the Polish videos. You see those like YouTube, the Polish weightlifting videos where they have a lot of kids. They like show them like, yeah, there might be, and the videos are probably a little bit more made into a little propaganda, but it's what they're doing. There's a lot of kids in a gym type setting. They're all practicing the same kind of movements and going through these routines where, you know, there's incorporated aspects of learning technique or something, maybe for 15, 20 minutes. Then there's a lot of, you know, this structured playing going on, running, jumping and stuff.
Yeah. And another thing that the Polish and I'm sure other countries do as well.
I know for sure in Germany and in Poland, what weightlifting competitions look like for kids there is very different. So there's a structure to the competition that it looks like a lifter comes in and kids will compete against each other from ages, you know, let's just say 8 to 12 or something or 5 to 9 or something. It's a certain age band.
I know for Poland, I think it's up to age 14.
Right.
So maybe 13 and under, this is the type of competition they're doing.
And so what the competition looks like is they lift a set amount of weight, something like 50% of their body weight in the snatch, 80% of their body weight in the clean and jerk. And there's a score sheet each judge has, and they execute the lift. They get 3 attempts at the same weight. And they're recorded, they're graded on that lift based on 10 parameters of technique, right? Was the bar close? Did they lock it out? Did their feet move the right way? You know, these 10 parameters are then marked off. They get a score for that lift. So there's no emphasis on how much did you lift? Did you win because you lifted the most weight? It's how well did you do against the score sheet, against yourself? And I know in Germany, there's a similar system where they have the same kind of approach. It's 50% of the body weight in the snatch, 80 in the clean and jerk, a score sheet. They also do, and probably in Poland, I'm guessing, they have like a overhead shot put toss for distance that they add into that. And I believe in Germany, they allow the lifters to increase weight on the attempts, but they are graded on their scoring in the lift so they can actually compete against lifters that are older than them and stronger than them. Because, for example, you know, if Chad is 5 years older than me or 2 years older than me and he gets a 8 out of 10 on his technical parameters, but he lifted a little bit more weight, but I get a 10 out of 10 and lifted less weight, then we can be competitive. And they probably have some kind of simple, you know, formula for figuring that out. But that's the whole structure of that is excellent in that they're teaching people that, you know, the execution of lift is the primary concern here. Perfecting the technique, emphasis is on development and on the skills and the quality of movement rather than on the outcome of the competition or the amount of weight you're lifting. And then like in the German example where they have like an overhead medicine ball or overhead shot put throw, they're also including part of training into the actual competition. So it's not this isolated event where you go to a meet, I did well or I didn't do well. You know, I also don't believe they give medals out.
Well, and the reason for including something like overhead backwards throw is that's a great measurement of just like full body power.
Yeah.
So even though someone may be slower to develop in the technique of the lifts, perhaps you can track and be like, all right, well, let's keep our eye on this kid because they're very powerful and explosive. And the reason for staying away from the heavier loading, and another mistake that would be made here is really too much emphasis on strength, maximal strength development.
Right.
Why does that become problematic?
Well, if you spend too much energy or too much time, if the focus is on something like maximal strength development, you can do a bunch of things. One, you can inhibit the athlete's ability to move fast. You can really deteriorate speed qualities. If you put emphasis on squatting really heavy and lifting really heavy weights, it's most likely going to slow the athlete down, especially if they're, you know, attempting heavy squats, you know, singles and doubles at near maximum intensity. You're basically punishing this athlete the rest of their career because they're going to reduce any speed qualities they could capitalize on or maximize in that phase of training. And then from a technique standpoint, developing someone's physical qualities before developing or allowing the technical skills to develop is going to put an emphasis on how they execute the lift. Somebody who's very, very strong, especially like very, very strong in the legs and doesn't have a well-rounded technique or well-rounded strength, can develop really poor movement qualities and really bad technical habits. And that stuff just plays out into the long run being a slow, not very good, not very fast lifter. You know, they may have a difficult time understanding or like conceptualizing how to lift weights that don't feel really, really light. You know, it just creates lots of problems. It just cascades that way. The strength training, all of the emphasis on the physical qualities needs to be promoted to the or emphasized at the end of the development of technique. Something that's kind of interesting that I'm reminded of is in East Germany, you know, a long time ago, what they would do is the head sports, like the head of weightlifting in the federation there, the national coach, whatever, would create like a piecemeal program, like a program that was disseminated to all of these club coaches. And the program was limited in its scope. It had like, let's say, just 3 days a week of training, and a certain amount of volume, a certain amount of training was done. And they were given to the coaches. The coaches were not allowed to alter this program as they administered it to kids more than like 10 or 15%. You could do a little bit more, a little bit less, but they didn't want any kind of modification of the training program to these kids because they were looking for talent. And what would happen is if they gave this program to coaches and then the coaches were like, well, I'm going to do my own. And they take a kid, let's say they take Chad, and he starts training 8 times a week. And he gets way better, way faster. So he's really accelerated. Whereas I'm training 3 times a week with my coach. Chad is going to go to a competition like we're talking about with these kids where they're kind of graded on different things. And he's going to look like a way more advanced, way more talented athlete.
Because I am, but yeah.
Well, that's true.
Suck it, Ada.
So anyways, what happens is then you have an athlete who's artificially appearing to be more talented, more physically talented or gifted than they really are. And in the end, is that something that's going to, you know, their theory was that that's going to prevent us from finding the most talented athletes. But that whole scenario could also play out in a situation here where you have somebody who's excelling in results because of an excessive amount of training to accomplish that, rather than allowing the development to take place at a natural progression, you know, through the use of just a very general program that allows them to develop and capitalize on the qualities they have.
Yeah, and this problem is, I mean, an exact example of early specialization,
right?
That the athlete did more and more specific training towards weightlifting at a younger age, so they had a higher result at that younger age. But the problem that they were identifying is that they didn't care about a higher result at a younger age through the means of more training specific to that goal.
Right.
So they didn't care about picking the best 11-year-old weightlifter. They cared about picking the 11-year-old who would become the best weightlifter. And the same thing holds true for basketball, for baseball, for football, for gymnastics, for soccer, all these different things. So what it boils down to is a strategic use of a broader exercise pool and more variations of exercise, you know, in the case of a weightlifter, more variations maybe of the snatch and the clean and jerk, or less specific variations that maybe wouldn't be included in an adult's training. And then for the bigger picture of just general athletic development, it's activities that aren't directly linked to their sport. So it's youth soccer players benefiting from gymnastics-based movement, and, you know, youth weightlifters and gymnasts benefiting from track and field-based movement in the long run, even though it doesn't necessarily derive this great short-term benefit.
There's something to be sort of clarified too, is that technical practice, the actual practicing of the skill, is not something that shouldn't exist within youth training. If we look at a great example like the hammer throw here, you don't have very good hammer throwers in the United States. And probably a big part of that, you'd say, is because there's not a lot of practice of the actual skill early on in any of the development. It's not in high school. They don't teach that. It's not to say that you shouldn't practice the actual sports skill or practice the technique of these exercises or the sport you're planning on training. It's that should not comprise the sole entirety of loading or training is just on weightlifting or just on the hammer or whatever it is. But it does need to be prevalent, because that's this early time period is an excellent time to learn the proper coordination and speed components of any of these movements.
Right? Yeah. And, you know, from a practical standpoint for most American parents and stuff, is you don't know what your kid's going to be good at. You know, if you were a college sprinter and your wife was a college sprinter, yeah, there's a pretty good chance your kid's going to maybe be a sprinter or inclined towards sports where sprinting is at a premium or speed is at a premium. So whether it's soccer or football or track, whatever it may be. But in a lot of cases, it's you want to develop this general base and then sort of let the kid gravitate towards what they enjoy and where they're successful. At least in my case, I know those two would have a lot of overlap with them. I don't know. Why would someone enjoy doing something they're bad at? But
Ashley Richards handbag.
So this big, broad exercise pool early is critical. Because you got plenty of time.
Yeah.
You got plenty of time to put more weight on the bar. You got plenty of time to do more specific exercise.
Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people like powerlifters, weightlifters, and CrossFitters. Life insurance companies calculate your policy rates based on your nearest age, not your actual age, and rates increase as you get older. So lock in the best rate possible by getting a free quote today. 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4% and 33% on their life insurance. Health IQ can save our customers up to 33% because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver,
Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ, and you must qualify to get the special rate. Visit the website for more details there. Health IQ is the official life insurance partner of USA Weightlifting, and you can go visit healthiq.com/juglife. Use the promo code JUGLIFE to see if you qualify and get your free quote today. We are back on the Jug Life talking about some youth training considerations. So we've talked about some of the means that are important, some specific considerations, particularly to weightlifting. And now I want to talk about developing a long-term strategy for long-term athletic development. In this, you know, again, remember the difference between biological age and developmental age. I'm going to talk about biological age here, but you kind of got to assess for yourself the developmental age of the athlete. We're going to look at four. We're going to break up long-term development into four stages. I guess we can call it five. They basically have birth to 5 years old as our first stage, 5 to 9-ish for the second stage, 10 to 14 years old in the third stage. So that's sort of late elementary school in through middle school, and then 15 through 18 years old, high school age, as our fourth stage, and then 19 plus, so college and beyond as the fifth stage. So in that first stage, birth to 5 years old, let your kid play, let your kid, you know, just have fun and do all that stuff. Introducing swimming early on, again, great. Yeah. Great thing, because they probably can swim or move through the water earlier than they can walk because of buoyancy, reducing the strength necessary. And there's going to be some coordination and fluidity to movement develop there. Gymnastics can be introduced very, very early. So that's kind of the first place to go. If your child is 4 years old and can do 10 pull-ups and 50 push-ups, it's a more in-depth topic. But so that first one, extremely general. Let them have fun and do whatever they're going to do and play games and just be active. So our first block of time is 5 to 9-ish years old, where a little bit more structure can be applied, and recreational sports are usually become an option. Because I know I started swimming on a like swim team at 5 years old. I started playing soccer, you know, an AYSO, just, you know, neighborhood kind of team at 5 years old. I think I started basketball like on a team at 8 and track at 8. So this is an important time. You know, they're all important times, and this is kind of a big application of our idea of phase potentiation, that the more active and more varied and coordinated the kid becomes in this first stage, the more likely and better potential they're going to have in the subsequent stages. So from a practical application standpoint, and how, you know, you can, you're probably not raising your kid in a Soviet sports school right now, but something you can do, and it's going to be good for social development and kind of balance all these different things, is that from that age 5 to 9-ish, you know, 9 or 10 years old, would be to have your kid play 4 different recreational sports. So 1 for each season. And what those sports are isn't hugely important. The, you know, playing soccer can be good. You know, basketball is going to have its own skills to develop. Gymnastics, of course, is great, and that's gonna be a good thing. Swimming, whatever it is, just four different sports. The more varied they are, probably the better. This is important for social. This is important for psychological, and of course the physiological development as well. And they're probably gonna practice that sport 1, maybe 2 times a week, and then play a game on Saturday, you know, Saturday mornings. That's great. Let them do that. Different sport for every season. Do not Yes. Well, they play on the ASOS soccer team in the fall, and then we go to this club team in the winter and the spring, and then they play on the travel team during the summer. Stop. Don't do that. You're doing your child a disservice.
But I already ordered all the David Beckham posters for his room. Yeah.
That's not the best way for the kid to be successful. And even in the example we gave earlier of Ilya Ilyin, when did you start training for weightlifting? 6 years old. I think it would be safe to say that there was never any other sport that he was aimed towards.
No.
From age six. It was always going to be a weightlifter. So all of his training was specific towards the goal of weightlifting, but it was not specific weightlifting training, if you understand the distinction there. And that would be this first stage is you might know that your kid is destined to be a basketball player because you're 6'8" and your wife is 6'3". So basketball or volleyball is probably the route that they're going to end up going, but that doesn't mean that only basketball or volleyball, whatever it is all they should be doing to eventually become the best. And I'm not trying to give actual parenting lessons here about letting the kid kind of do what they want, but the training is going to be extremely general. So four different sports, one per season, a little bit of sport practice, a little bit of competition, trying to keep in mind technical learning before tactical learning, and the whole time, omnipresent throughout that time, should be an active lifestyle of, this guided play idea. If they want to do gymnastics type things the whole time throughout that, and if that's one of the sports that they compete in, have gymnastics competitive season is one of those seasons, and that's fine. And they can do gymnastics the rest of the year, and that's probably great, but it has to have times of more and less emphasis. Track and field stuff as well will fit in really well there. As you move to the next stage, 10 to 14 years old. So again, late elementary school through junior high. Choosing three competitive sports seasons, and having one a fourth season now that the child is becoming a little bit more developed and can do a bit more organized training with some level of intensity. So now you'd have three seasons for competitive play in three different sports and one season dedicated to just physical training. The frequency of sport practice is probably going to have to increase at this point. Now maybe they practice two or three times a week for their sport and they play on the weekend and they have an occasional tournament, where they play multiple times in the weekend. Don't let it be every weekend is a tournament, or they have a soccer tournament on Saturday and a basketball tournament on Sunday kind of thing. Because I see that, living in Southern California in this very, very competitive club sport culture, I've seen that way too many times, and it's doing the kid a disservice in the long run. So now they're practicing a little bit more. There's more emphasis on the tactical aspects of the sport, but they still have to develop great technique and they have to be becoming a great athlete. So now the physical training is still omnipresent. When they're practicing the sport two or three times a week and playing on the weekend, there has to be a little bit less of the physical training. But that means you still get to have a season where that's all they do is physical training. Again, these are 10, we're talking about 10 to 14 year olds now. So it's not, they're not doing double days every day kind of thing, but they're doing, slightly more focused training, and competitive drive and competitiveness is going to become a growing thing at this point, because results are going to start to matter. And it's a tough thing to balance, the competitive result against the long-term thinking for things, because a lot of what we're talking about is delayed gratification, and that's a tough thing for anyone to learn, let alone a 10-year-old to understand that even though they may have lost a game today, that the stuff that they're doing is going to help them win more games when they're, you know, 18, 20, like when it actually matters. That moves on to the next phase, 15 to 18 years old, high school. You know, the age of a multi-sport high school athlete is kind of going more and more by the wayside. But when you look at the people who are signing football scholarships to Ohio State and Alabama and the athletes who get drafted in the NFL and NBA and people who are Olympic athletes, there's an incredibly high percentage of them are multi-sport athletes in high school. And that's because the people who end up being the most successful athletes down the road in one single sport are in fact the best general athletes as well. So they're developing those general athletic skills through the high school years. So maybe now in high school, they choose two competitive sports to play. They have a season for each of those sports. They're probably practicing it 4, 5, 6 times a week and then have their competitions throughout the week or on the weekends, whatever it may be. And, you know, as a parent, you're going to have less control over the structure of things at this point. But what you can control is, you know, that they are doing multiple sports, that you're not letting it turn into, you know, as much as possible within the structure of the team and be able to, you know, get playing time and all that kind of thing. You're not letting it turn into, you know, basketball in the winter and then there's a summer league and a fall league and so on and so forth, and that's all they do. That it really, I think, takes some balls and bravery on the parents' side to trust a plan like this. And to some degree probably a very talented kid for it as well, to be able to have a kid and a parent where you can kind of tell the coach, like, hey, you know, he or she's got to kind of back off things in this off-season league that they're in. But when it matters for the school league, you know, season, they're going to be there to do really well.
I feel like there's probably, and you probably would have a better grasp on this, but being in this area, but it seems like there's also like the battle between parents and coaches where, you know, you may have a talented kid who is playing high school football, who's, you know, really, really fast, or just, you know, a man amongst boys, and they underdevelop the qualities of a very high-level player because they have physical qualities that exceed the people they're playing with. Mm-hmm. And so there's no sense the coach cares about wins or whatever. The coach is like, well, we're just going to take this guy who's fast, and we're going to run the ball with him, and he's going to beat everyone. That guy never learns how to run routes well or never learns how to catch properly, whatever it is. And so you end up I can think of a man who would have a very lengthy, wordy response or answer to this kind of scenario. But, you know, where coaches, people are so fixated on the goal that they forget that these athletes still need to develop to achieve the highest level of success. So you're fighting with coaches that may want kids to be, you know, oh, you got to play basketball all year. But that coach's knowledge of coaching is, you know, superficial at best. And, you know, your kid is ultimately going to do better not being a basketball player year round, obviously, or any of these different sports. And so, you know, there's got to be a fight there, I think, where if you really want success for the kid, which you should, then, you know, it's very important that you are able to manage and make the decisions to say, hey, you know, even if you are the star basketball player, that you still need to participate in multiple sports to develop fully as an athlete. You may very well be the best basketball player later on and continue to do that, but it's still important to include this varied training within that early developmental period.
Yeah. And, you know, if we really wanted to get into it, you don't have to play basketball and football to be the best basketball player. You just have to have a strategically varied training plan for the basketball player in a year round. That's more than I just play basketball all year. We just practice and play, which you see happening a ton in basketball, particularly American basketball. And I think the situation that Max is talking about, a difference in technical development for the sport versus the just the result. You see manifest itself a lot in American versus European basketball players.
Yeah.
And you get, you know, these European big men who have a wider range of skills, like guard, you know, ball handling skills, as well as post play skills, because they come up through maybe a better structured system.
Yeah.
Where the American players are maybe better in the isolation game. But then you can get an American player like Anthony Davis. Know that everyone talked about Anthony Davis can bring the ball up. He's 6'11" and can play like a point guard. And Anthony Davis, in some terms, got lucky in his development of that, because I know that he grew a ton late in high school. Yeah. You know, if he was a 6'2" guard for his freshman and sophomore year, and then by the time he was a senior, he was 6'11". You know, his position totally changed, but he didn't forget how to do the things that he learned coming up. So it's the strategic variation. It doesn't have to be playing the different sports, but it's a kind of simpler way to come about variation in general skill development. So during this high school period, you'd have two competitive seasons where you practice the sport a lot, you play the sport. There's some physical training, you know, still present in season, hopefully, some general physical training. And then you have two dedicated off seasons where the athlete is doing general physical preparation with the goal of preparing for the next sport season in mind a little bit more. But, you know, at high school age levels of development for sport, it's not highly specialized, and special strength exercises and more specific energy system work isn't as big a deal. You know, the way that a high school basketball player versus a high school football player is going to learn how to run fast and jump high are basically exactly the same. That means that they're going to achieve those by. So the idea of a sport-specific training is maybe a bit of a conversation for another day. But again, this sort of incorrect thinking along the way. And then that's going to bring you to age 19+. And if you're very fortunate, and as parents, you've given great genetic material to your child, maybe they get to get a college scholarship at this point and go on and play one sport, or they're doing a non-college scholarship sport like weightlifting, and now we can really push for the biggest possible result now in the, you know, in the latter years as a junior, moving into the senior years of weightlifting. I think a lot of these problems of early specialization and a lack of well-rounded development are reasons that historically you've seen American weightlifting be its most successful at the youth level, and then a little bit less successful, but still relatively very successful, still relatively successful at the junior level, and then less successful at the senior level comparatively. And, you know, this past week at World Championships, we're doing a lot to kind of turn that narrative around. But, you know, speaking in the broader sense, that if you push a 13, 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old athlete, lift the most weight you can every day or every week, that's going to produce a great result in the short term. And, you know, a still very good result for the junior athlete. But with some of the things that Max talked about, you know, how fatigue is going to disrupt technical technique acquisition, maybe diminished speed qualities, just a less athletic person by the time, you know, 19, 20, 21, you know, senior lifting comes on, someone who has taken a more general, I just run around the gym and do all the exercises type of approach, like Ilya Ilyin, is going to be maybe a later developer. And Ilya was lifting huge weights at youth ages as well, but may set someone up for a bit later peak to their career, but a higher peak rather than an earlier and lower peak. And then, you know, doping thrown on top of that is like, all right, well, let me just throw some gasoline on this fire. Yeah. So where the early specialization model, you know, maybe age 13, 14, 15, this very quickly increasing and high result that starts to tail off at 18, 19 and into the seniors, a more broad long-term development model may hold down the results, just the pure competitive result for the youth athlete through their early teens, but at, that 17 to 21 type of time, and again, biological age versus developmental age and all these things taken into consideration, there's going to be some intersection of these two models in the late junior, early senior age, where the long-term development path athlete is going to surpass the results of the earlier specializer, and the time that they're going to be surpassing them is the time when it really matters to have the best results. So that is a big view just kind of a broad overview of a very big topic of youth training considerations. If you have questions about this stuff, please ask us in the comments. We'll do our best to answer. I think this is a topic that if the viewers find it interesting, I find it very interesting.
Yeah, I enjoyed a lot.
Yeah, so we can talk more about some ideas with this. If you like the Jug Life podcast, we're glad that you're watching. We're glad that you're listening. So we'd also love if you were to give us a 5-star review on iTunes and write us something nice and or funny. Preferably not mean and funny, but if it's funny enough, it can be mean as well. Like Is Mac, who writes high class and low squats. 5 stars there. He says, Chad, Wild Blues, Wesley Smith, and Metropolitan. There we go. Max Montana hosts what is arguably the most in-depth and entertaining podcast on strength available on the entire interwebs. Oof. If you're looking for a pair of hosts with ample knowledge of powerlifting and weightlifting, look no further. They deftly pepper in 90s action movie references and thinly veiled Mark Ripiteau insults to spice up the atmosphere a bit. You'll need a notepad to catch all the pertinent nuggets of information that spill out of their mouths. And if you're watching on the YouTubes, you'll find yourself asking this question: is Max Asian or not? And I actually used to ask myself the same question. He's not.
Not. Yeah. Not at all.
He's a spicy Italian man.
Yeah.
And then tune in weekly for a delightful romp through the world of strength sports, CWS, and Mad Max Montana, brought to you by Cheesecake and Chin Scrapes. It's a lifestyle. Thank you, Mr. or Miss Is Mac. Send me an email, chad@jtsstrength.com, and I'll send you out a t-shirt or something. And thank you. Thank you for the review. And if you like the podcast, go on there and write us a 5-star review on iTunes so more people can find the Jug Life and hopefully learn about some good ways to lift. We're very proud of our YouTube content brought to you by the world's strongest videographer, Shorty Sedang. So go ahead and subscribe to the channel there. We're trying to release 3 videos a week, including the podcast. Just putting Shorty on the spot there. With a nice balance of weightlifting, powerlifting, nutrition, and movement content. So subscribe and make sure you don't miss any. If you are interested in coaching for powerlifting, weightlifting, or super total, check out juggernautcoaching.com. And we have a lot of different programs on there. Almost definitely one to fit you. Max, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, max_Ada, on Facebook, or email me, max@jtsstrength.com.
And I'm Chad Wesley Smith, @ChadWesleySmith, and @JuggernautTraining on Facebook and Instagram. Today's episode of The Jug Life was brought to you by Orange Slices and Long-Term Training Choices. It's a youth training lifestyle. And
that's a good one.
And, yep, filling up your newsfeed all day. That's what I do. But I actually don't really even post that much anymore. But
quality, not quantity.
Thanks for listening. This was the Jug Life podcast, and we will see you next week.